Caution is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Dropped into Juicebox, featured on Vancouver's campus and community radio station CITR on the FM dial at 101.9. Or maybe you're one of our online listeners at CITR.ca or podcast listeners at juiceboxradio.com. Anyway, we're really glad that you're going to be spending this hour with us, and we're very glad to have you.
Yes, we are. And tonight on Juicebox, we have a special show, as usual, in store for you. The V-Day edition of the vagina monologues. I'm like stumbling on vagina because I can't read my own writing.
It's that word, and that's what this whole show is all about, is getting to own your own vagina.
So we have special guests, and a couple of them are going to be calling in tonight, different vagina monologue shows that they're working on. And also we have, a producer from Penny Line Productions going to be calling in from doing a show in
on March 3rd for the vagina monologues, as well as the UBC production. We'll also have Rachel, who's one of the co-directors, which they're actually going to be calling in right in the middle of their dress rehearsal tonight.
Yeah, it's really exciting and very, very honoring that they'd be doing that, because the shows are coming up very soon. And we're going to be taking calls. If you need to call in or you want to call in and talk about vaginas, we would love for you to do that, especially on the break. Would be fabulous. But anytime that you feel comfortable calling in, that's at 822-2487. And Caroline and I are open to your questions. So if you've been burning to call, please do so. Right?
Exactly.
What is next? So if your vagina could talk, Caroline, what would it say?
In two words?
In two words.
Slow down.
Yeah. Slow down. I like that one. Is that you?
Feed me.
I want.
Yum. Yum.
Yeah.
Oh, start again.
No. Over there.
Oh, lick me.
Stay home.
Brave choice.
Think again.
More. Please.
Embrace me.
Let's play.
Don't stop.
More. More.
Remember me?
Come inside.
Not yet. I guess I should practice this more. Not yet.
Oh, mama.
Yes. Yes.
Rock me. Rock me.
Enter at your own risk.
Oh, God.
Thank God.
I'm here.
Let's go.
Let's go.
find me.
Oh, thank you.
Bonjour.
Too hard.
Don't give up.
Where's Brian?
Where's Brian? That's better.
Yes. There. Right there.
Yeah. In two words, what would your vagina say? We are speaking from the Vagina Monologues. And yes, Eve Ensler's play, amazing. She speaks in her book, The Vagina Monologues, the V-Day edition, about, I don't know, it's really cool. And I'm going to read it right from the book. I come from the down there generation. That is, those were words spoken rarely and in a hushed voice that the women in my family used to refer to all female genitalia, internal or external, down there. It wasn't that they were ignorant of terms like vagina, labia, vulva, or clitoris. On the contrary, they were trained to be teachers and probably had more access to information than most. It wasn't even that they were unliberated or straight-laced, as they would have put it. One grandmother earned money from her strict Protestant church by ghostwriting sermons, of which she didn't believe a word, and then earned more by betting it on horse races. The other was a suffragist, educator, and even an early political candidate, all to the alarm of many in her Jewish community. As for my own mother, she had been a pioneer newspaper reporter years before I was born and continued to take pride in bringing up her two daughters in a more enlightened way than she had been raised. I don't remember her using any of the slang words that made the female body seem dirty or shameful, and I'm grateful for that. As you'll see in the pages and in the play of the Vagina Monologues, many daughters grew up with a greater burden. Nonetheless, I didn't hear the words that were accurate, much less prideful. For example, I never once heard the word clitoris. It would be years before I learned that females possess the only organ in the human body with no function other than to feel pleasure.
If such an organ was unique to the male body, you can imagine how much we would hear about it and how much it would be used to justify. Thus, whether I was learning to talk or spell or to speak of my own body, I was told the name of each of these amazing parts, except in one unmentionable area. This left me unprotected against the shaming words and dirty jokes of the school, and later against the popular belief that men, whether as lovers or as physicians, knew more about women's bodies than women did. I first glimpsed the spirit of self-knowledge and... We're playing here, technical stuff. I first glimpsed the spirit of self-knowledge and freedom that you'll find in these pages when I lived in India for a couple of years after college. In Hindu temples and shrines, I saw the lingam, an abstract male genital symbol, and I also saw the yoni, a female genital symbol, for the first time, a flower-like shape, triangle, or double-pointed oval. I was told that thousands of years ago, this symbol was worshipped more powerful than its male counterpart. A belief that carried through to Tantrism, which central tenet is the man's inability to reach spiritual fulfillment except through sexual and emotional union with a woman's superior spiritual energy. It was a belief so deep and wide that even women
monotheism. Oh my god, I'm having technical difficulties right now. Monotheistic religions that come later retained it in their tradition, although such beliefs were and still are marginalized or denied as heresies by mainstream religious leaders. For example, Gnostic Christians worshipped Sophia as the female Holy Spirit and considered Mary Magdalene the wisest of Christ's disciples. Tantric Buddhism still teaches that Buddhahood resides in the vulva. The Sufi mystics of Islam believe that fana, or rapture, can be reached only through farashi, the female spirit. The Shekinah of Jewish mysticism is a version of Shakti, the female soul of God. And even the Catholic Church included forms of Mary worship that focused more on the mother than on the son. In many countries of Asia, Africa, and other parts of the world where gods are still depicted in female as well as male forms, altars feature the jewel in the lotus and other representations of the lingam in the yoni. In India, the Hindu goddess Durga and Kali are embodiments of the yoni powers of birth and death, creation and destruction.
Still, India and Yoni worship seem a long way from American attitudes about women's bodies when I came home. Even the sexual revolution of the 1960s only made more women sexually available to more men. The no of the 1950s was just replaced by a constant eager yes. It was not until the feminist activism of the 1970s that there began to be alternatives to everything from patriarchal religions to Freud, a distance from the A to the B, from the double standard of sexual behavior to the single standard of patriarchal and political religious control over women's bodies as the means of reproduction.
Those early years of discovery are symbolized for me by such memories, and this is Eve Ensler talking from the Vagina Monologues, as walking through Judy Chicago's Woman House in Los Angeles, where each room was created by a different woman artist, and where I discovered female symbolism in my own culture for the first time. Let me see. Or sitting in a New York coffee shop with Betty Dodson, trying to act cool while she electrified eavesdroppers with her cheerful explanation of masturbation as a liberating force. We love Betty Dodson.
We do.
Dodson, you can get her books, Love for One, and I can't remember the rest of them, but check out our website, juiceboxradio.com. You can find out about Betty Dodson. What else? Let me see. After all, the Indo-European word cunt was derived from the goddess Kali's title of Kunda or Kunti and shares the same root as kin and country.
These last three decades of feminism were also marked by deep anger as the truth of violence against the female body was revealed, whether it took form of rape, childhood sexual abuse, anti-lesbian violence, physical abuse of women, sexual harassment, terrorism against the reproductive freedom, or international crime of female genital mutilation. Women's sanity was saved by bringing these hidden experiences into the open, naming them, and turning our rage into positive action to reduce and heal violence. Part of the tidal wave of creativity that has resulted from this energy of telling the truth is in this play and this book.
And it's interesting that we're getting our call now, because actually this is a woman who's putting on the Vagina Monologues herself, and we will continue our thing. Okay, so hold on. I have to do this.
We're doing our technical difficulties as we get Rachel, who is calling in.
Thanks.
Which is wonderful, because she's actually calling in while she's doing her dress rehearsal right now.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Excellent. Thanks for calling in, Rachel. We appreciate it. We know that you're working hard doing your your dress rehearsal.
Oh, no problem. I really appreciate you doing this interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling. How's your dress rehearsal going so far?
Oh, very, very well. Yeah, we just finished. I was just in the middle of giving the actors notes. Things are looking so good. We are so proud and so excited for tomorrow's opening.
Tomorrow's opening? Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so, really cool.
At UBC? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. University of British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia.
Yeah.
Hollywood Theater?
Go.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Frederick Wood Theater.
What's your favorite monologue in the play?
My favorite monologue, that's a really tough one. There's this one about a 72-year-old woman who's just coming to terms with a very embarrassing moment in her childhood, which I think is really poignant and very lovely. But honestly, I have so many favorites. It would be really hard to say. They're excellent.
What have you found with the show? Because I know you did it the year before. You mentioned to me earlier when I
that's
talked to you
right.
before this
yeah,
interview.
Yeah, I did Reclaiming Cunt last year, actually.
Nice. I love that monologue.
Do you love it?
I do.
It's a really weird one. It's really wild. This woman just goes on this endless tirade about this word and how beautiful it is and how everyone should reclaim it into this gorgeous, powerful, wonderful, inflective, lovely, womanly word. It's great. I really enjoyed doing it.
That's awesome. How did you perform it? I've seen it performed as James Brown's I Feel Good. Were they actually saying it before? Did you do it as an actual regular monologue? Or how did you perform it?
How did I perform it? I performed it as this woman. I think I just decided she was wholly possessed with this word. And she was a bit of a school teacher. She had this telescopic pointer that she would use to address the audience and conduct their chanting of this word over
nice.
And over. I managed to go into the audience and pick out certain people to yell out the word. And I think it went over really well, actually. I got a lot of good feedback. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you feel, in terms of the cast, what type of cast members are they all UB?
UBC students, or?
They are. Every single one of them is affiliated with UBC in some way, and I would have to say all of them are students, so, yeah.
Tell me what a vagina warrior is.
A vagina warrior, this can be a person of any gender, male, female, trans, you name it. Someone who is interested in protecting vaginas and everything that goes along with that. Somebody who is empathetic, sympathetic, kind to people, interested in ending violence. This Nice. Is a vagina warrior.
Who are your vagina warriors this year? Have you told them yet?
Oh, I know it's really cheesy, but I definitely have to say my mom.
Nice.
My mom was definitely my vagina warrior, but we had some really interesting ones in the cast. Oprah Winfrey came up. That was a really good one.
Nice.
And some other ones as well. One girl really loved Madonna. She really liked that one. So
nice. Yeah. Locally, are there any vagina warriors that you'd want to pick out?
Vagina warriors.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say, actually, one person in particular, James Foy, has been our stage manager this year.
Okay.
And he's done it a few years already with UBC, and he is probably the number one vagina warrior this campaign has. He's incredible. The amount of hours and effort and heart that he puts into this project is truly remarkable, and he definitely ranks right up there, so... Yay, James!
What, do you have any vagina stories that you want to share yourself?
Vagina stories? What kind of vagina stories?
Well, personal ones, if you'd like, or ones that are maybe cast members or people that you've met throughout just doing the show that maybe really great ones that, just interesting ones about vaginas that you've heard that maybe you might want to actually turn into a monologue at some point, because I know sometimes you're able to add different ones that cast members put together.
We are not allowed to add ones, actually.
It's cutting. You're cutting out, Rachel. Can you get back into a cell area that we can hear? You're cutting out, hun. Hello?
It's going fuzzy.
How bad?
Are you on a cell area? Are you, like, inside the building?
No, I'm outside. Okay. Oh, maybe that's a little better?
That's way better.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Well, I was just about to say that we're not actually allowed to add extra script. Eve Ensler is supposed to be the sole author for the evening. So in terms of the show, we're not allowed to add anything. But we do have our little own vagina powwows where we add our own stories into the pot and mix it up and definitely bond over that.
Give me an example.
One great one that I heard last year was this woman had really come to terms with her sexuality in terms of coming out. There was another one about a girl who had lost her virginity during the rehearsal process of the show, which was really lovely, and she had a very good experience there. They really, like, really run the gamut, but they're all quite lovely, so.
Well, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell me is there a number that people can call for tickets, and
Absolutely.
If there's certain dates?
That number would be 604-822-26. 7-8.
Perfect. And you guys open tomorrow, you're on Friday, and you've got two shows on Saturday?
That's right. A 2 o'clock matinee, which is 2-for-1,
nice.
And a 7 p.m. show. All of the evening shows are at 7 p.m.
Oh, that's perfect. And when are the proceeds going to? Which organizations?
They're going to the SASC, the Sexual Assault Support Center on campus,
nice.
WAVA, Women Against Violence Against Women, VDay.org, and Heal Africa. We have 4 beneficiaries this year.
That's great. What is VDay actually giving the proceeds to this year? Is it for women against war, or?
That's correct. The spotlight is women in conflict zones. And actually, I was just on the website today checking it out, and it seems like Eve Ensler is doing small local workshops in many places in the world.
Oh, that's
Mostly
great.
In conflict zones, where she goes in and she actually works with local activists and helps to strengthen their movements,
nice.
As opposed to coming in and starting one of her own, which isn't as grassroots or organic. So she seems to be doing some very great work there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Cool.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to let you go back to your dressing
rehearsal. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for calling in.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a great night, ladies.
Oh, no worries. And I'll say hi to you when I come in on Saturday, because I'm going to come see the show.
See you then. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's great.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much, Rachel, for being such a fabulous interviewee. Always, you never know what you're going to get, but we'd love to have you back on because you sound so engaged and so
she's great.
Amazing with the way you're speaking. Now, Caroline and our dedicated listeners, I have to tell you that it was Julia's fault. That she marked the wrong reading, which Caroline and I did very passionately, which was the foreword by Gloria Steinem as opposed to supposed to be reading, which was from Eve Ensler. So it didn't sound right to me as we were reading it. It sounded very feminist. I mean, and Eve Ensler is a feminist as well. But it was just wrong. She's talking about being Jewish and everything. So
should we read the right part?
I think we want to read the right part because I think it's perfect right now. So
that sounds perfect.
All right. So Eve Ensler is speaking, and she says, I'm not sure why I was chosen. I didn't, for example, have girlhood fantasies about becoming vagina lady, which I'm often called, sometimes loudly, across a crowded store. I could not have imagined that I would one day be talking about vaginas on talk shows in places like Athens, Greece, chanting the word vagina with 4,000 wild women in Baltimore, or having 32 public orgasms a night. These things were not in my plans. In this sense, I don't think I have had much to do with the vagina monologues. It possessed me.
I see now I was a prime candidate. I was a playwright. I had for years written plays based on interviews with people. I was a feminist. I'd been violated sexually and physically by my father. I had exhibition tendencies. I'd been known to outrage, and I longed with all of my being to find a way back to my vagina.
I don't really remember how it began. A conversation with an older woman about her vagina, her saying contemptuous things about her genitals that shocked me and got me thinking about what other women thought about their vaginas. I remember asking friends who surprised me with their openness and willingness to talk. There was one friend in particular who told me that if her vagina got dressed, it would wear a beret. She was going through a French phase.
I definitely do not remember writing the piece. Simply put, I was taken, used by the vagina queens. I never outlined the play or consciously shaped it. As a matter of fact, the whole process was totally off the record. I interviewed women about their vaginas while I was writing my real play. It was my partner, Ariel Orr Jordan, who I'm now convinced was somehow on the payroll of the vagina queens, who got me to take it seriously and helped me conceive the piece and make a plan. But even then, to some degree, the vagina monologues has never really been any of my own business.
I show up. I exercise to stay in shape. I drink plenty of power mocha frappuccinos. I try to stay out of the way. Here, for example, are some of the mysteries. I was never a performer. It did not occur to me that I was actually performing the vagina monologues until I had been doing it for about 3 years. Before that point, I felt merely as if I were telling very personal stories that had been generously told to me. I felt strangely and at times fiercely protective of these women and their stories. I could not move when I was telling the stories. I had to remain seated in a high back stool with a place to rest my feet. It was like climbing into a spaceship every night. I had to speak into a microphone, even in places where I could easily be heard. The microphone functioned as a kind of steering wheel at times, an accelerator at others.
For the first years, I needed to wear stockings and heavy boy shoes to perform this piece. Then later, once my director, John Manitello, got me to take off my shoes, I could only do it barefoot. I had to hold 5x5 cards in my hands through the entire performance every night, even though I had the piece memorized. It was as if the women I'd interviewed were made present by those cards, and I needed them beside me. Vagina stories found me, as to the people who wanted to produce the play or bring it to their town. Whenever I've tried to write a monologue to serve a politically correct agenda, for example, it always fails. Note the lack of monologues about menopause or transgendered women. I have tried. The vagina monologue is about attraction, not promotion.
Many things that have happened in the life of the vagina monologue seem completely surreal and at the same time completely logical. And she talks a lot about some pretty fabulous examples, like there's a cunt worship at Wesleyan Warren University. David Letterman tries to say vagina, but he can't. Talking about Barbara Walters and Roseanne, what does your vagina smell like? She's performing this in her underwear for 2,000 people. She makes up her own lines, one of them being, what does your vagina smell like? Answer, my husband's face. Vagina miracles, sightings, and occurrences go on. The greatest miracle, of course, is V-Day. An energy, a movement, a catalyst, a day to end violence toward women, born out of the vagina monologues.
As I travel with the piece from city after city, country after country, hundreds of women waited after the show to talk to me about their lives. The play had somehow freed up their memories, pain, and desire. Night after night, I heard the same stories. Women being raped as teenagers, in college, as little girls, as elderly women, as women who had finally escaped being beaten to death by their husbands, women who were terrified to leave, women who were taken sexually before they were even conscious of sex by their stepfathers, brothers, cousins, uncles, mothers, and fathers. I began to feel insane, as if a door had opened to some underworld and I was being told things I was not supposed to know. Knowing these things was dangerous.
Slowly, it dawned on me that nothing was more important than stopping violence toward women. That the desecration of women indicated the failure of human beings to honor and protect life. And that this failing would, if we did not correct it, be the end of us all. I do not think I am being extreme. When you rape, beat, maim, mutilate, burn, bury, and terrorize women, you destroy the essential life energy on the planet. You force what is meant to be open, trusting, nurturing, creative, and alive to be bent, infertile, and broken.
In 1997, I met with a group of activist women, many from a group called Feminist.com, and we formed V-Day. As with all the mysterious vagina happenings, we show up, we do the groundwork, we stay in shape, and the vagina queens do the rest. On February 14th, 1998, Valentine's Day, our first V-Day was born. 2,500 people lined up around the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City for our first outrageous event. Whoopi Goldberg, Susan Sarandon, Glenn Close, Winona Ryder.
Lily Tomlin, Margaret Cho, as fabulous as she is, Gloria Steinem, and so many others, Rosie Perez, etc., joined together to perform the vagina monologues and created a transforming evening that raised over $100,000 and launched the V-Day movement. That was February 14th, 1998.
Wow.
The miracle of V-Day, like the miracle of the vagina monologues, is that it happened because it had to happen. A call, perhaps. An unconscious mandate, perhaps. I surrender to the vagina queens. Something is unfolding. It is both mystical and practical. It requires that we show up, do our exercise, and get out of the way. In order for the human race to continue, women must be safe and empowered. It is an obvious idea, but like a vagina, it needs great attention and love in order to be revealed.
Wow.
That is Eve Ensler. I know I'm about to cry myself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's been a while since I've been moved so much on the radio. That is Eve Ensler in her introduction to the Vagina Monologues, the V-Day edition. The foreword that we began this evening was by Gloria Steinem. We didn't finish it, but you can get the book and finish it yourself. So tonight on Juicebox, I really felt compelled to speak about the Vagina Monologues and V-Day and what it is all about, because I want people to understand that violence against women needs to change, but I wanted to do it in a positive way. So that was my motivation behind tonight's show. And I'm excited to say that we are already at break time and that our next interviewee is already calling us, and she's going to be speaking to us after the break. And she is another producer putting on a V-Day Vagina Monologues event happening very soon in around the Vancouver area. So
we'll be back, and when we're back, we'll get to talk to Gwen. And if you want to give us a call as well, you can give us a call at 604-822-2487. And that's 604-UBC-CITR. And just keep that dial locked, and you'll find out more about the Vagina Monologues. And hopefully you'll check out the show and one of the productions worldwide. That's 101.9 FM. Thank you.
Yeah. That's right. Technically, biologically, physically, psychologically, take a sabbatical from your radical, fanatical battle. Sit on my saddle and rattle, rattle, rattle. Take a sabbatical from your radical, fanatical battle. Sit on my saddle and rattle, rattle, rattle. I like to lick it and suck it like you do. I like to hold it and squeeze it like you do. I like to seize it and slap it like you do. I like to tease it and tap it like you do. So back it up, baby. Back it up, back it up. Back it up, baby. Back it up, back it up. You know what I'm talking about, right? Well, it could only be one thing, you know? Mine's fake, inanimate, but feels great to stimulate your prostate. Relax, it's fat. Let me pack your crack and make it all fat up in your sacroiliac. So back it up, baby. Back it up, back it up. Back it up, baby. Back it up, back it up.
Is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You're back in Juicebox. Thank you for listening. Tonight, we are talking about vaginas, in particular the Vagina Monologues. So if you've just logged on or just tuned in, we're talking about vaginas. And there's productions going on for the V-Day Initiative worldwide, and we just got a glimpse of a little bit of that in the first act for the UBC. Second half, we're going to be talking to Gwen Hunt, who is producing a production of the Vagina Monologues. Welcome, Gwen.
Hi,
Gwen. And I just want to quickly say, sorry, I have to acknowledge the music that was playing, and that was Peaches. I'm sure a lot of listeners probably are familiar with her, our fabulous, fabulous Peaches, and she was singing Back It Up, Boys. So I think she was saying something like, it's supposed to feel better for boys. So I thought that was kind of
a
good call on tonight's show. Thank you, Peaches. So yes, thank you, Gwen, very much for calling in, and welcome to Juicebox.
Oh, hi.
Thank you. So tell me a little bit about your show. You've been doing yours for 5 years. What has made you decide to continue, and what made you start in the first place?
Well, we started doing the Vagina Monologues because I was approached by a women's center who wanted to raise some funds, because every year Eve Ensler offers the monologues royalty-free from the end of January until March 11th, or to March 8th, I'm sorry, International Women's Day. And so we started out doing it just as a fundraiser the first year, and it becomes very addicting.
What is it that made it addicting for you? Like, did you start off as a cast member or start off as a producer?
Well, I'm a writer and a producer, and I write my own plays, and so I came off as a director and a producer. But what's addicting about it is that it's very empowering for women. And even though after doing it for 5 years, we've probably done 15 performances, you don't ever get tired of it because every cast is a different group of people, a different group of women discovering the power of the word vagina. The audiences are all different. Yeah. It's amazing to sit. I sit in the audience because my job is done once the actors get on stage. And it's always just so wonderful to watch the response of the audience, men and women.
Yeah, you're mentioning that your son sometimes helps you direct that. How is that in terms of the experience? It must be really neat.
Well, he's more of the director. I mean, he controls everybody, and he has the skills a little bit more than I do. But so we co-direct. I have a really good eye for casting the right people, and he knows how to get the most out of them.
Nice.
And it is a great experience. It's a fun experience for him.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the age range of your cast members? I'm just curious.
Oh, 18 to 80.
Wow, 80 years old?
Oh, yeah. We've had I don't think we've ever had anyone younger than 18, 17 or 18. And we did have a woman 1 year who was, I think she was just about 80. She was in her late 70s anyway.
Nice. How did she find with the monologues? Did you give her the one that's in regards to about the woman who goes on her date when she's an older woman?
The Flood.
Yes, The Flood.
Yeah, usually
you.
The Flood is supposed to be performed by an older woman.
Nice.
And one of the older women who was in our show, she wanted to know if her husband could come because she wasn't sure if it was an all-woman show. So that was kind of fun. But it's usually very empowering for them when they come out because for a lot of, especially older women, they've never said the word.
Vagina.
And that's what's so interesting about it, because if you don't say the word, they remain isolated and unprotected. So it's something we have to keep saying over and over again.
No, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
How are the women in regards to when your son's directing? Do they feel comfortable using the word vagina, especially the older ones that may have not have acted before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they feel totally comfortable. I don't think people come out to be, I think sometimes people come out and they're a little bit intimidated by the one piece. There's some pieces that are a little bit difficult for some people.
Give me an example.
Can you say anything on the air?
You can say anything.
Say whatever
you
want.
Fat cunt, whatever you'd like.
Oh, okay. Well, like, for example, the reclaiming cunt piece. And usually when people come into the show, at first they're kind of, they're a little nervous about it. But we scream it in rehearsals. We scream it over and over and over again. And everyone, and that's what the audience does as well. And so you kind of get past that. You get past feeling uncomfortable with that word.
Yeah.
I was uncomfortable with the word when we started. And now it just slips off my tongue really easy.
No pun intended. Sorry, I'm just being bad.
To be honest with you, actually, I have an entire book about cunt, and the word actually originally meant goddess. Did you know that?
No.
Okay, so that's what the word originally meant, was goddess, and it was a patriarchal world that began to take the word goddess to equal something evil and to be reckoned with and something to be controlled, and so they would use it like, they would say, those cunts, we have to control them, we have to be wary of them, and so the word cunt became derogatory. So that's actually interesting that Eve has not caught on to that or is in the monologues, but I've got a whole book about it, and I do notice that the actual monologue has got a bit of, you know, kind of talking about it being cute and things like that and niceness, but doesn't speak to the history of the word.
No, it doesn't, no.
Which is about goddess. So.
Yeah, of course, the monologues are about interviewing individual women.
Right,
and she's just basically recording and reporting what they said.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of... There are... Every year, there's different pieces in it. Like this year, Eve Ensler has written a piece spotlighting women in conflict zones. So every year it changes a little bit.
Which is where the V-Day, the monies are going for towards that, for women in conflict zones, right?
Some of it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the worldwide campaign, yes.
Exactly.
What other organizations are you donating money? You're mentioning about the march at
work? Yeah, we're doing Art Matters Society, which is our nonprofit. We're doing a memory march on March 25th. Yeah, from Crab Park to Thornton Park. We're walking up Main Street.
That's in the downtown
side. It's a walk vigil to honor the over 3,000 women and children who have been killed in Canada since about the 1980s.
Wow.
It's a list that was started by Mary Billy, and we've taken it on, or I've taken it on.
Oh, and, wow, good for you, wow.
Compiling a database, and because there isn't really a comprehensive list anywhere.
No, I understand that.
And so what we're trying to do in this march is just recognize all of the women across Canada.
That's fantastic. That's
excellent. I've heard about that. Gwen, we'd love to have you back on Juicebox sometime. I don't know how far away you are from UBC, but we'd love to have you on the air for an hour talking about what you're doing and how you feel about all these things, and maybe even your son if he's interested. But I would love to have you on the air again sometime.
Sure.
That'd be great.
We'd be interested in doing that.
She's done some playing about the missing women as well, so it'd be
excellent.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we'd like to have
script work and film. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. And make sure all of you listeners out there come out and see the Vagina Monologues on March 3rd at the Wise Hall.
And where can they get tickets?
A little place called Shakti on 21st and Main. It's a little tea shop.
Nice. Can they call in at all if they want more information or a website that they can...
They can go to ragmag.net, R-A-G-M-A-G, ragmag.net, or 604-859-2407. That's a Fraser Valley number.
Oh, that's perfect.
Excellent. And
yeah.
then it's Shakti. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, yeah, cool. I love having these fabulous 10-minute interviews. Mm-hmm. You're so good at asking questions, Caroline.
Oh, thank you. Well, you're really good at a lot of other things. So, and I wish I could say things, like I was saying earlier. There's times where you come up with stuff and then... Yeah, you just say it so well. And I'm like, thank you.
I've been doing this for a long time.
That's true.
I'm sure that you would eventually get
there. The experience is good. I'll stop being a virgin one of these days.
So speaking of V's and virgins,
yes.
I wanted to read the cunt monologue. The,
that
the
Gwen
vagina.
Was just talking about?
Yeah, I think the listeners might appreciate it. So, reclaiming cunt. I call it cunt. I've reclaimed it. Cunt. I really like it. Cunt. Listen to it. Cunt. C-c-ca-ca. Cavern. Cackle. Clit. Cute. Come. Closed. C-closed. Inside. Inside. C. Then you. Then coo. Then curvy. Inviting shark skin. You. Uniform. Under. Up. Urge. Ugh.
Hmm.
Ugh. You. Then N, then cun. Snug letters fitting perfectly together. N. Nest. Now. Nexus. Nice. Nice. Always depth. Always round in uppercase. Cun. Cun. Hmm. A jagged, wicked electrical pulse. Mmm. Then soft. Mmm. Warm. Mmm. Cun. Cun. Then t. Then sharp. Certain tangy t. Texture. Take. Tent. Tight. Tantalizing. Tensing. Taste. Tendrils, time, tactile. Tell me. Tell me. Cunt. Cunt. Say it. Tell me. Cunt.
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 That was from the Vagina Monologues by Eve Ensler and whomever inspired her to write that.
It's a pretty fantastic monologue.
Yeah, well, I've seen it a few times. I don't think I did nearly what most of them have done, but definitely worth seeing the play.
It is really worth seeing the play, and there's two productions within the Vancouver area if you're interested.
Yeah.
As we were mentioning, UBC this weekend, which we had Rachel on earlier discussing that, and on March 3rd.
Rachel, we have her last name. I just found it. Rachel.
It starts with an F.
Rachel Fredriksson.
Fredriksson.
It sounds like Fredrik. Okay. Anyway, she's wonderful. She's the UBC one. Shall you read a little?
I would love to. I think there's something about just the word cunt in general. I think I was even mentioning the other day. sometimes I hate the way it looks and stuff like that. And it's really interesting because
you mean vaginas, vulvas, the vulva,
all of that, all of the above. And sometimes it's one of those things where it's difficult to look at, and sometimes. Even though this is a very feminist thing, it takes a man sometimes to show you what it means. Not necessarily, but in this case, in this particular monologue, it did. Because he liked to look at it. This is how I came to love my vagina. It's embarrassing, because it's not politically correct. I mean, I know what should have happened in a bath with salt grains from the Dead Sea, and yet playing me loving my woman self. I know the story. Vaginas are beautiful. Our self-hatred is only the internalized repression and hatred of the patriarchal culture. It isn't real. Pussies unite. I know all of it. Like, if we'd grown up in a culture where we were taught that fat thighs were beautiful, we'd all be pounding on milkshakes and cookies and leaning back on our backs and spending our days thigh expanding. But we didn't grow up in that culture. I hated my thighs, and I hated my vagina even more. I thought it was incredibly ugly. I was one of those women who looked at it from that moment on and wished I hadn't. It made me sick. I pitied anyone who had to go down there. In order to survive, I began to pretend that something else was between my legs. I imagined furniture, cozy futons with light cotton comforters, 600 thread count, of course, little velvet settees, velvet rugs, leopard rugs, or pretty little things like silk handkerchiefs, quilted pot holders, or place settings, or miniature landscapes, crystal lakes, or moisty Irish bogs. I got so accustomed to this that I lost all memory of having a vagina. Whenever I had sex with a man, I pictured him inside a mink-lined muffler or a red rose or a Chinese bowl. Then I met Bob. Bob was the most ordinary man I've ever met. He was thin, he was tall, nondescript, and wore khaki clothes. Bob did not like spicy foods or listen to Prodigy. He had no interest in sexy lingerie. In the summer, he spent time in the shade. He didn't share his inner feelings. He had no problems or issues. He wasn't even an alcoholic. He wasn't funny or articulate or even mysterious. He wasn't mean or unavailable. He wasn't self-involved or charismatic. He didn't drive fast. I didn't particularly like Bob. I would have missed him altogether if he hadn't picked up my change that time I dropped it on the deli floor. When he handed back my quarters and pennies, his hand accidentally touched mine, and something happened. I went to bed with him. That's when the miracle occurred. It turned out Bob loved vaginas. He was a connoisseur. He loved the way they felt, the way they tasted, the way they smelled, but most importantly, he loved the way they looked. He had to look at them. The first time we had sex, he told me he had to see me. I'm right here, I said. No, you, he said. I have to see you. Turn on the light, I said. Thinking he was a weirdo, I was freaking out in the dark. He turned on the light. Then he said, okay, I'm ready. Ready to see you. Right here, I waved. I'm right here. Then he began to address me. What are you doing, Bob? I said. I need to see you, he replied. No need, I said. Just dive in. I need to know what you look like, he said. But you've seen a red leather couch before, I said. Bob continued, and he wouldn't stop. I just wanted to throw up and die. This is awfully intimate, I said. Can't you just dive in? No, he said. It's who you are, and I need to look. I held my breath. He looked, and he looked. He gasped and smiled and stared and groaned. He got breathy and his face changed. He didn't look ordinary anymore. He looked this hungry, beautiful beast. You're so beautiful, he said. You're elegant and deep, innocent and wild. You saw all that in there, I said. It was like you read my palm. I saw that, he said, and more. Much, much more. He stayed looking for almost an hour, as if he was studying a map, observing the moon, staring into my eyes, but it was my vagina. In the light, I watched him looking at me. He was so genuinely excited, so peaceful, so euphoric. I began to get wet and turned on. I began to see myself the way he saw me. I began to feel beautiful and delicious, like a great painting or a waterfall. Bob wasn't afraid. He was engrossed out. Began to love my vagina, and Bob lost himself there, and there I was with him in my vagina, and we were gone. Oh, God. And Marius just came in as I just told him I love my vagina. And that was from Eve Ensler as well, of course.
From the Vagina Monologues. Wow.
It's pretty powerful stuff.
It's really powerful. You did a good job there, Caroline.
Thank you.
I got some chills from that, actually. Got more chills. I think I need to go and see the Vagina Monologues. It's been a couple of years. I've been to the UBC one. I mean, obviously it changes every year. You know, 3 years in a row I went to it, and nice. I missed last year. So maybe I might go again this year. You're going on Saturday night?
I'm going Saturday night. It's worth it, and I'll be there on March 3rd.
It's probably sold out Saturday night.
I think their ticket sales have been going pretty steady. I know their 2-for-1 show at 2 o'clock on Saturday has been going quite well, but I do know there is ticket availability for the other dates, and it goes to a good cause. And I think, do you have another monologue you want to share?
I want to just do the one about hair.
Oh my goodness.
Because I want us to talk about it.
Okay, you do it. I want to hear it.
We've got like 7 minutes, so we're going to do it. Okay, this one's called Hair. And it's dedicated to Dan, actually. Oh, yeah. You cannot love a vagina unless you love hair. Many people do not love hair. My first and only husband hated hair. He said it was cluttered and dirty. He made me shave my vagina. It looked puffy and exposed and like a little girl. This excited him. When he made love to me, my vagina felt the way a beard must feel. It felt good to rub it, and painful, like scratching a mosquito bite. I felt like I was on fire. There were screaming red bumps. I refused to shave it again. Then my husband had an affair. When we went to marital therapy, he said he screwed around because I wouldn't please him sexually. I wouldn't shave my vagina. The therapist had a thick German accent and gasped between sentences to show her empathy. She asked me why I didn't want to please my husband. I told her I thought I was weird. I felt little when my hair was gone down there, and I couldn't help talking in a baby voice, and the skin got irritated, and even calamine lotion wouldn't help it. She told me marriage was a compromise. I asked her if shaving my vagina would stop him from screwing around. I asked her if she'd had many cases like this before. She said that questions diluted the process. I needed to jump in. She was sure it was a good beginning. This time when we got home, he got to shave my vagina. It was like a therapy bonus prize. He clipped it a few times, and there was a little blood in the bathtub. He didn't even notice it, because he was so happy shaving me. Then later, when my husband was pressing against me, I could feel his spiky sharpness sticking into me, my naked, puffy vagina. There was no protection. There was no fluff. I realized then that hair is there for a reason. It's the leaf around the flower, the lawn around the house. You have to love hair in order to love the vagina. You can't pick the parts you want. And besides, my husband never stopped screwing around. And I wanted to speak about that one and dedicate it to Dan because Dan 3, that is, because he's the only man in my sexual repertoire that ever asked me to grow my vulval hair, because they say vagina all the time, but they actually mean vulva. Anyway, so he asked me to grow my vulval hair, and he's the only man that ever asked for that in 20 years of being sexual. Wow. So I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm always interested in pleasing my partner, and I'll try it. So I have. And since I spent so many years and thousands of dollars using electrolysis to get rid of my vulval hair, it's been kind of an arduous process and a bit frustrating for me because I don't have much left. So I feel like, I've got no bush, and he likes the bush. So then I was, like, frustrated and growing it and trying, and I noticed several things. One, I kind of like the way it hides things, makes it a bit more mysterious. I also like the way that it feels different from the skin versus the hairy part. And, you know, the inside skin, which is a little bit more sensitive and everything. So I've kind of liked that contrast. I also like pleasing my lovers, so that's been fun. But I have also noticed that I don't feel as much as I used to. I feel a lot more when I'm shaved, and I actually prefer the way it feels when it's shaved. I'm starting to like the way it looks when I've got hair, but I don't like the way it feels as much.
I agree with you.
Because hair also comes inside my introitus, like the inside of my vagina. When the hair goes inside from penetration and things like that, I can feel the little hairs going in there and kind of irritates it a little bit more. I mean, I get over it pretty quickly, let me tell you, because, you know, he's the best lover I've ever had. So I kind of get over it fast. But it's kind of like, I like the shave because I feel more sensitivity when you get touched and licked and have a mouth on you and stuff like that.
It's a lot easier to have an orgasm, I know.
For you,
for
Caroline?
Myself, definitely.
So I'm kind of torn. I mean, I've spent, you know, the last 20 years being shaved and electrolysis and all the waxing and every other thing I could possibly imagine to get rid of the hair. And I don't know, starting to reintroduce an experience of hair. And so I wanted to read that vagina monologue because I thought it was perfectly timed.
So do you think you're going to keep hair and experiment a little longer? Or what do you decide?
I've trimmed it recently.
Yes.
I've trimmed it recently because I didn't especially like seeing it wrapping around his tongue when I'm watching him licking me. And I can see the hairs all wrapping around. And,
yeah.
I'm like, and he loves it, of course. He's all good about that. But I'm just like, oh, my God, I'd be like choking me. Like, I'd be like...
I know, it gets stuck in the back of my throat if a guy had hair like that down there.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to have a new relationship to the whole experience, but it's, I'm not sure. So I trimmed it. I've trimmed it recently because I am having like less sensation than I'm used to having. So I don't know, I'm tossed about it.
Interesting.
I think maybe I might keep it just trimmed unless my partner would prefer it shaved.
Nice. I actually like getting shaved during the actual sexual act. It's very sexy.
I've only been shaved once in my whole life. Yeah, that was pretty fun, actually. It's a bit nerve-wracking, though, really. You can imagine guys get all nervous when they start shaving their face for them. You know, you're like, trust me, let me do it. You know, and so you got the face and all that. But then, of course, you cut it because you don't know what you're doing. And, of course, the angle's different and all the rest of it. I mean, I would imagine. I mean, in the vagina monologue, they're talking about how there's a bit of blood in the thing. Of course there's going to be blood, like... I don't know. I mean, if somebody else is shaving you, unless they're really practiced at it, unless they're really good about it.
It depends how gentle they go and how much shaving cream, how long you let it rest first. And it can actually be really sexy.
And the quality of the razor has to be good quality.
Yes, the quality of the razor really makes a difference. And if you get shaving cream all over there, it actually works. It's actually really sexy, actually having sex on the bathroom floor.
Well, make sure that you get all the shaving cream away from your vulva and your vagina, girls, because we, and boys, we do not want that in our vaginas. Thank you very much. All right, so I think Marion is here, and
is
I think
it that time already.
Yeah. So sorry. This is the exit. Here we go. All right, it's time to go.
Well, we had fun.
I had so much fun. That was probably my most favorite one that we've ever done together.
I agree. I think we should do more. Well, next week we'll be talking about sexual pleasure. So for females.
Yes.
So if you want to write in and tell us what works in terms of how you've pleased a partner,
or women that love women, then that can give us some feedback on how you make love to your women,
or women writing in about what your partner's done for you that you've really enjoyed and you want to share, because you think other people would really enjoy it, because we want to share pleasure, because it's Valentine's Day next week. And
Caroline and I have to be in the booth on Valentine's Day until 11 p.m., which means we're not getting laid, most likely. And
well, that's supposed to anyways with my whole,
Oh, maybe Marion will help us out.
Well, you never know. It could be quite an intriguing show. If that was the case, we might get ourselves in trouble, Julia.
We'd get kicked off the air like the last sex educators did.
I do want to hear that story. It sounds very intriguing. But if you are interested in letting us know all your information, just give us an email just at julia@juiceboxradio.com, and you have to stay tuned for Hans Kloss's Misery Hour with Marion, which is coming up next on CITR, and he'll guide you into the wee hours with his mixed bag of fabulous tunes. So thanks for listening to Juicebox Radio, and we're going to be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 p.m.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.